Good evening. James McCanny here with my Science Hour. It is November 20th, 2014. And wow, what a number of topics to cover tonight. First of all, the incredible snow, cold winter, the deviation from normal temperature. That means the normal average temperature. There's a grid or a temperature a data grid that would cover the United States, giving you normal temperatures. The deviation from that, meaning the change from that normal temperature, is between minus 20 and minus 35 degrees. And some people say, well, maybe it's warmer someplace else in the world right now. And the answer is no, it's not. I've been checking the temperatures around the equator. Temperatures are 10 to 20 degrees cooler than normal. So this is a worldwide issue of the cold. And of course, let's look at Buffalo, New York, 6 feet of snow, 3 more feet on the way. That's an incredible amount of snow. The people are simply housebound. And, you know, it's an incredibly dangerous situation. Many people would ask me, is this manipulated? And the answer is, I don't know. I don't know if there's manipulation going on. For example, we know that the drought in California that lasted a couple years was manipulated. You could see the storm cells that tried to cross a barrier in the Pacific Ocean. You could see that barrier where the normal flow of the moisture that would come off the Pacific Ocean in cyclonic movement, where it would normally go into Southern California and that part of the country, would hit a barrier. It was just like a line, and they would then drift north up into many times as far north as Alaska. And so somebody was blocking the rain from going to California. Now we are beset with the second. This winter is starting. Last year, if you know, the most severe winter on record started around the end of November. So already where we sit now, we have had January-like weather in November, in early November. Now, if you go back to 1991, we did have weather that was similar to this, that there were three storms that came through the country that formed the perfect storm. Now, I talked about a week ago on my show about that, so I won't repeat the details, but what is going on now beats last year, which was a record winter. And you don't just look at a day, you don't just look at a week, you don't just look at a month. You have to look at the entire picture, and also globally. You don't just look at, oh, your temperature up in northern North Dakota or something. There's a joke that I heard as a little kid. The only thing between North Dakota and the North Pole is a barbed wire fence. And that's true. I mean, you can have some pretty severe winter. I grew up in winter. I tend not to spend winter in the wintry places. But sometimes I get to spend a little time there. And what's going on now is extremely severe. Now, here's the problem. If the temperatures continue to drop as we go into the winter, the snow that has fallen will not leave. They're talking about rain in Buffalo. And so why is this dangerous? Well, you already have roofs of old buildings that are being stressed to the max. You got to get that snow off of there. And if rain is coming, you really have to get the snow off of there. Otherwise, those roofs will collapse. At that point, you're talking frozen pipes. The pipes will be broken. You have a ruined building, a building that really would have to be reconstructed to be livable or usable if it's a business building. So we have extreme severe situations, and of course, on a national level, nobody's talking about it, because in the scientific community, they don't know anything. They're still talking global warming. According to the scientific community, we have a record global warming. The UN report and all the scientists that go with it and get their pay, they're mum as a church mouse. They can't say anything because their paycheck depends on global warming. Well, folks, there is has not been global warming for years. And so the real cause of this clearly is the fact that the sun is putting out much less energy. There's an issue that when the temperatures get higher, that would cause more evaporation from the oceans, and therefore it would rain more, also clouding the sky. There seems to be some kind of a system on Earth that balances between heat and cold. So if there's too much heat, it causes rain, which cools things down, which causes more cloud cover, and would naturally keep things at a nominal temperature. But when the sun simply doesn't put out as much energy, this is the result, and that is what's been going on for actually years. And so anyway, that's somewhat the weather report. It's very difficult to predict weather, and some people want to know what is the trend of the sun. I was on a show the other day with Maria Heller. I'm on that show once every month, once every 2 months possibly, as a guest, and I said, we are in uncharted territory. We're in uncharted waters relative to weather. The Earth, in our history, in our reckoning, has never done this before, where we have for weeks. Now, it wouldn't be unusual, like I say, to have a single day of diversion of, say, minus 35 degree temperature from normal nationwide. Would not be unusual. But as it continues, this is abnormal from our normal weather picture. But what's abnormal weather? That's kind of an oxymoron. Weather is changing, but here we're talking about truly climate change, where the climate of the globe is changing on a global scale. So the end result is as the Earth cools in many areas, it could get drier because there's not as much moisture coming off the oceans. And so cold, dry could be a condition in certain areas. Buffalo, of course, gets the lake effect up there. And so anybody that's by the Great Lakes might be prone to more snow, just because when the moisture falls, it's going to be in the form of snow and it's not going to go away. But Buffalo gets that reverse lake effect, famous for the area, and I guess the skiers may be in love with this, possibly the snowmobilers, but I don't even think the snowmobilers can make use of that much snow, too much of a good thing. Okay, so anyway, the problem is, if this continues, we could be in January with minus 60 degrees and snow that would just simply cover the houses, because the snow that's there now is not going away. I mean, 10, 20, 30 feet of snow with minus 60 degree temperatures. And this is what I'm talking about. Nobody in Washington, we got little bozo there in the White House that has no knowledge of anything. You know, he's just the guy who, well, he's a New World Order shill. That's the best you can say. And it wouldn't matter. Some people say, well, you're against Democrats. No, if there were a Republican there, they'd be doing the same thing. This battle of Democrat versus Republican is just a ruse. It's all it ever has been. And the people that are really running the country are sitting in banks in Europe. Okay, so, but the real problem here is the federal government is not prepared, cannot be prepared. And this is what I have been talking about all along. People have to be prepared to take care of themselves, simply put. And so I'll keep up on this, but this is a very severe situation. It's not being regarded as severe in terms of the what's being done by the entities that should be doing something, the federal government. Okay, a listener question came in, and I'm going to spend a little bit of time on this show. How to store your water filter when not in use? Now, I'm talking about gravity feed water filters. I'm not talking about any other kind of inline filter or whatever. your inline filters, whether it's under your sink, on your sink, attached to your water faucet or whatever, I don't consider emergency, and you shouldn't either. If it's attached by a hose or an electrical connection or either or both, it is not for emergency. It depends on your the infrastructure to provide you water, whether it's a well water, but most people are in the city, so they depend on municipal water systems. So you're dependent on somebody else. The second you depend on somebody else or some other entity, especially a government entity, you are dependent. You are not independent. So the only type of water filter, which is for emergency, that means you are taking care of yourself, you and yourself only, and you're not waiting for the big shiny government truck to drive down the street and drop off your supplies, as most people think are going to happen. Oh, the government would take care of us. Yeah, they're going to take care of you, all right. If you say anything, they're going to haul you off to a camp. That's how they're going to take care of you. So you better be able to take care of yourself. The very first thing you need is clean water. So, as in repeating, if it's not a gravity feed water filter, it is not for emergency. Also, just quickly, if you were at your house or your residence, whatever, your office, wherever you have your gravity feed water filter, and believe me, they're not all created equal. The kind you buy at the big box store or whatever are not good filters. They're not, they'll take out some stuff. If you got some gunk in your water, they might take it out. But they don't hold a candle to what I sell. The GF filters that take out all of the chemicals, etc. But the point is, okay, let's get to a gravity feed water filter. And the listener question, how do you store or how do you maintain your gravity water filter? So I'm not only going to talk about storage, I'm going to talk about maintaining it and all kinds of other details. So this show, the November 20th show, you might want to earmark or bookmark so that you can listen to it a few times. Hopefully I will have time to write this down and actually put it on the webpage, but lately I tell you I have been so swamped with things to do that I don't know when I'll be able to get to that because it's fairly complicated. But anyway, here we go. How to store your water filter. So this is just if you plan to not use it, maybe you have a couple of them, you want to store one and put it away, or it's at the cabin, it's something you use for summer camping, it's your extra one. How do you store it so that it's in good condition when you come back to it? Okay, first of all, the elements themselves contain silver, micro silver, and that prevents bacteria from growing and in the filter. But if you leave it too wet, if you leave that candle, as we call it, that's the white filter element, if you leave it wet, it can grow bacteria. Anything can grow bacteria on the surface. So anyway, the point is that you want to dry the filter elements very well before you store them. And in storage, they will always have a little bit of moisture in them. But here's what I do. If it's the winter time, you can put them on a heating element. You can put them someplace where it's warm, and given a few days, they will dry out. You could put them in the window. Even though they're white, the sun will hit them, and they'll dry out. So anyway, also just a side note, in fact, I'm going to make a note here quickly for myself, is to never let them freeze when they have water content in them. A dry filter element can be frozen or left in the cold and freeze, deep freeze, whatever you want. Nothing will happen to it. But a filter element, and now we're talking about the white ceramic filter elements, the kind I sell, never let them freeze with water content in them. And of course, whether it's the stainless steel, if you have a stainless steel container, never let that freeze either, because it'll, of course, rupture the container. Water will break anything. There was an experiment that was performed. This is done many times in engineering schools. They take a big steel ball, like a foot in diameter, solid steel, and they drill a hole down into the center, put a drop of water down in there, and then turn a screw all the way down that completely closes the cavity, a long screw, so that all there is this little space in the middle with some water in it. Then you freeze that. You bring it below the freezing temperature and let it thaw, and it'll break that steel ball in two pieces. The other thing you can do is put that drop of water in the middle, put the screw in, then heat it up to the temperature of steam. It'll split that steel ball with steam. That's how much force there is in water, in freezing, etc. So do not let your water filter elements or the containers freeze with water in them. They have to be dry. So dry rule number one in storing your water filter, take it apart. I always take it all the way apart. I take off the spigot. I take the rubber washers off. I wash them with a good dishwater type soap that you would wash dishes with. You could use antibacterial so that you get any bacteria that's on there. And that's a good practice anyway every now and then. Take it all apart, wash it, and let it dry good, and then put it all back together. But the filter elements, to store them, dry them out thoroughly. And you can tell when they're dry. Now also, if they're a little bit soiled on the surface, let them dry out good. And then take either a butter knife. I just use a butter knife, and without any serrations or whatever, just the backside of a butter knife, and scrape the surface of your filter element, scrape off the white surface, which is now many times it's like orange or brown. It depends on the gunk that's coming in your water. And scrape that off, and you get back to a nice, clean, white ceramic look. And you can do that, by the way, many, many, many times. I've done it probably 10, 20, 30 times to a water filter. And here's the issue. The ceramic water filters have inside, first of all, I'll talk about the older style filters that have carbon on the inside. The new GF filters also have carbon on the inside, activated charcoal, medical grade, and that absorbs the chemicals that are in the water. Some of the chemicals are absorbed in that. And so if you have a lot of chemical activity in your water, then you will use up that activated charcoal much more quickly. So many people ask, how long will a water filter last? Well, remember, there's two parts to filtration. One is you're actually filtering out gunk and particulate matter and bacteria, things like that, down to a certain level, down to the limit of the filter. There's like a size limit. And it will filter out particles to that level. The other thing is, never use a filter that has a crack in it. If your filter has damage to it of some kind, then do not use it, of course, because all the water will pour through that crack and none of it will come through the filter. So it's a filter with a crack in it is worthless. It's not going to filter water at all, and you have to be very observant of that. But typically, kept in good condition, a filter will last and last. So back to the cleaning part, just take a butter knife, or you can use, some people use a Scotch-Brite pad. Never use soap. Never use soap to clean a water filter element. You can use soap to clean your container, but not the filter element itself. Okay, back to the filter elements. They contain silver in powder form, in a micro form, in the element itself, in the white part. That prevents bacteria from growing in the element itself. And so in a minute I'll be talking about things like radiation and other hazards that could come in your water. So just hang on, I'll be talking about that in a minute. But as I said, if you have water, if your filter elements are wet and you put them in a bag or something, a plastic bag, and stick them in a drawer, they can grow bacteria on the surface, and that's something you really don't want. So you want to dry them out good. on a heater, in a windowsill, and you can tell when they're dry. You pick it up, and it feels dry. It's lighter weight. And I would say go the extra mile and leave it there double, triple time before you store it. Or you could put it on a gas oven, natural gas oven or an LP oven, has a pilot light. And so in the stove, it'll just stay warm and dry. So you could put them in there for a number of days, anywhere where it's warm and dry. Okay, remove the spigot, wash with dish soap, thoroughly dry. Never put in a dishwasher. I would never put any of my stuff in a dishwasher. Of course, the stainless steel you can. And the plastic, I don't know. I don't know about the HDPE plastic containers that I sell. But I would just wash them with a good antibacterial dish soap by hand, rinse them out real good, let them dry thoroughly. And then you can store everything. What I do is I just take the top part, put it in the bottom part, store it, and then maybe wrap some kind of plastic wrapping stuff that you get to help seal packages when you're moving, that kind of stuff, and just then put it in a dry place in the cupboard or store it. And if I had an emergency and I had to leave and I was going to go in my car and I didn't know where I was going to end up or I was going to go someplace and there were emergency conditions, the one thing on the planet I would have with me is my water filter. I always, always, always carry a personal water filter with me. If you're traveling or if you're going, even in your car, it's a good idea to have one in your car. That's one of the 1 liter or the 2 liter personal travel emergency sport water filters that I sell on my webpage. Have one in your car, just there, dry, ready to go. And I'll tell you a story. Last spring, I was traveling, and I had my big stainless steel, regular kitchen-size stainless steel water filter with me. And I was using it in a kitchen to do all the kitchen things. And I gave it away to a poor family that didn't have a water filter. I gave it away. So all I had left was my 2 liter. I had a 2 liter at the time water filter, and I used that for all of the kitchen use, and it did fabulous. You just have to keep filling it every time you empty it or take water out. And then I had the other extra containers. I always had those full, so I always had plenty of water just from that one 5-inch travel water filter in the kitchen. So in emergency, it will do just fine. It'll provide you with quite a bit of water every day. Okay, on to storing and maintaining your water filter. One thing about the larger filters, if you're using the add-on filter for arsenic fluoride removal, if you're using that little canister add-on filter, many times that will not revive well after you dry it and store it. So you might have to use a new one of those. I've never had very good luck storing those after they've been used, drying them out. But anyway, that's just an aside note. But the ceramic filters themselves do store well. You can store those for years and years and years. And that's one of the things I tell people. Right now I sell 10 packs of water filter elements on my webpage, and that is, to be honest with you, that is probably the biggest selling item on my webpage, where people are buying 10 packs of water filter elements, and they already have their water filter. Okay, they've got some extras, but now they want to be sure that they have water filter elements well into the future. And so, depending on whether you are in a city, if you're in a city, no question about it, get the GF filters. If you're out in the country and you don't have a lot of chemical activity in your groundwater, there's no fluoride in your water. But remember that a lot of groundwater has arsenic in it as a natural element. So you should really, even if you have well water, you should always use that arsenic filtration that you get either with an add-on filter or with the GF filters, which take all of that out and more. The pharmaceuticals, the heavy metals, everything is taken out in those GF filters. But I use both. I use both. I have remote places where I have the old style filters. Sometimes I use the add-ons if it's groundwater. If it's rainwater, you can do just fine with the old style filters because you're not getting a lot of chemicals. You're not getting the arsenic or the fluoride. So the old filters work just swell if you're camping or if you're using lake water or stream water or you're using rainwater and you're at a remote cabin or something like that. The old style filters work just great. So that's why I have them there. Not everybody needs the more expensive GF filters to take out all the chemicals that we experience in the cities today. So bottom line is the same goes for the GF filters that have chemical removal in the filter itself. It depends on the level of filtration and chemical absorption. Basically, what's going on is they are absorbing chemicals. They're not filtering chemicals. They're absorbing the arsenic and the fluoride and the heavy metals, the lead, the etc. But remember that they leave in the minerals that are in solution. Now, this is very important. I had a listener ask me a number of weeks ago, I think I talked about it on the show, if the water filter elements take out salt from seawater, and the answer is no. They do not, and it's actually a good thing. I wish they would. We're working on actually gravity feed water filters that will take out salt from seawater. But if they do, they're going to take out all the other minerals too that are in solution. There's a plus and a minus there. You do need minerals, the mineral content in solution in water. You do need that for your well-being. I'm not talking about seawater. I'm talking about just regular fresh water. Has mineral content from the groundwater, and you do need that. You do not want to drink distilled water. So if you have a reverse osmosis filter, that's not for drinking. You can drink it, but you have to add salt content, mineral content to that water because it's going to deplete your body of minerals, and you're going to be very unhealthy, even though you'll think you're healthy, but over the long term, it's very bad to drink demineralized water, distilled water or reverse osmosis water, very bad for your health. So the average lifetime of a filter element, we usually say, is 6 months. When I sell you a water filter, you get 4 with the stainless steel or 5 with the plastic filtration unit. And I always recommend people just start using one filter element and put plugs in all the other ones because your filter comes with plugs, so you can use 1 or 2 or 3 or, of course, 4 filters or 5 if it's the plastic one. But start with one filter element. That gives you 3 extra or 4 extra right off the bat. But then it's always a good idea, get that 10-pack. Get that 10-pack, and then you have water filtration for many years to come. The average lifetime, what we say under normal conditions, of a filter element is about 6 months. But I have used them sometimes for years, up in the remote, say a remote cabin or camp or something like that. Just keep cleaning it. You know, you're not going to, it's not an issue of the chemical absorption potential of that filter being used up. You're just using it to filter water. Okay, use it for years and years. And by the way, don't throw out your old elements. Dry them out and save them. Because in case of emergency someday, that's the best thing around. It's like an old pair of shoes. You know, always have an old pair of tennis shoes. So if you go in the lake, you have an old pair of tennis shoes. You're not ruining your new ones. And if worse comes to worse, you have at least an old spare pair of shoes to wear. But water filters are very much like that. You want a spare. If you run out of all your good ones someday, you'd like a few extras. So save your old water filters, dry them out, put them in storage. It sounds like kind of a wacky thing to do, but that's what I do. And then in case of trouble and, you know, the case of long-term future use, you got those stored. You can use them. You'll get a lot of extra use out of those. in case of emergency, the kind of emergency where nothing gets cured, where you have years and years and years of no infrastructure and you're using that, there might be a day when that's the best water filter going. But for normal use, of course, use your water filters. Like I say, change them out every 6 months and then you're probably good to go. Remember that water filtration is not 100% perfect. It's getting the most out of your water, the most problem issues out of your water, so you have clean water. You should be using, for all of your sprouting, for cooking, everything, you should be using filtered water in your kitchen. Don't rely on your tap water for cooking, etc. Everything you put in your food, for washing food, if you're going to soak, for example, berries that you buy and you're going to soak them, put them in that water from the filter. Another thing I do when I store my water filter is if I put it all back together and it's all ready to use, I put a little, like what I use is a paper towel. I've kind of folded up and I put it under the cover so that the cover is not really tight. And then I put between the upper canister and the lower canister, I slip a little piece of paper towel in one side. So it's kind of, a little bit of air can get in and out. And that's just if you store it completely assembled. You want a little bit of air to get in and out, because through change of temperature, rise and fall of temperature on a daily basis, it's going to accumulate a little bit of water in there. Water can condense in those closed areas, and then you've got a little bit of water in there, and that's when bacteria starts to grow. So always leave some kind of an air gap in there, understanding that condensation can occur even though you have this thing sealed. And over time, you'll open it up and you go, gee, I dried this out. It was perfectly dry when I started. I know it. And there's some water in there. There's a little bit of mold. There's kind of a musty smell. Well, leave it so a little bit of air can get in and out. There's an issue with water, and this is very strange. I've come to understand this over the years of selling water filters. Viscosity of water varies depending on your location and source of water. There are places where the water filters work slowly, and you go, gee, this thing, he sold me a water filter, and it doesn't flow fast. You know, well, first of all, remember that if a water filter is dry and you're just starting out, it's going to take a while for that filter element to get wet and moist and for the flow to begin, and so they will increase the flow rate with time once they're saturated and wet and full of water. But there's places where the viscosity of water is such that they just never seem to flow fast. And you can take that same filter elements, etc., to another place, put water in, and they flow normally. And it kind of drives the people crazy, but it's like where you live. It's not something you can control or I can control. But the average place, the water should have a fairly good flow rate, and we kind of give a specification of the amount of water you should be able to filter per day based on on average viscosity of water. But it is a strange property of water that the viscosity of water depends on the source of the water. I always recommend that people have a way to store water. Once you've filtered water, if you're in an emergency situation, you should have a place to store water. Something I sell on my webpage is the modular filtration and storage system. These are big 6.5 gallon containers. So, you know, you're talking about 4 feet tall when the one sits on top of the other one, and then two extra containers, and these have screw top lids with rubber grommet washers so that you can seal these babies, and all together you've got about 20 gallons of water between the water filter and the three storage containers. You've got about 20 gallons of water available, and then you can buy extra tanks, 6.5 gallons each if you want. But minimum, you should have some kind of container with a ceiling cap that you can store water in and have it there in case of an emergency. You know, emergency happens. Some people say, well, I'll fill up the bathtub. Well, that's great, but if you have a a polluted cloud of gas in the air or some dust in the air that's polluted or has radiation pollution, the bathtub full of water is not a good idea. You want to filter the water, put it into containers that are sealed, and then when you open those, you know you have clean water. So at any rate, now let me talk about radiation, something that is on the mind of everybody. And so along with this, I want to talk about the pre-filter. It's something that's unique to my webpage. And literally, let's talk about radiation and let's talk about other kinds of pollution. Just sludge water. Let's imagine that, okay, it's springtime, the snow is melting, and your only source of water, it's an emergency situation, your only source of water is like the river or is out in the yard or the pond in the back or something, and you're taking water. You do not want to pour that water into your nice, clean gravity water filter. You want a pre-filter. And if you don't buy my pre-filter, you can make one by just getting a bucket, put a t-shirt in the bottom, drill some holes in the bottom of the bucket, put a t-shirt in, then some dirt. But a lot of times your dirt is more polluted than the water you're trying to filter. That's why I sell medical grade and food grade powders that go in the pre-filter. But for sure, you do not want to put radiation-laden water in a water filter, because what it's going to do is it's going to accumulate. And radiation likes to grab on to... radiation is typically in atomic form. And so what it does is it likes to grab on to dust or dirt or something. And so when you're filtering radiation, you're not filtering the atomic particle itself. You're filtering the gunk or the dirt or the dust or whatever that radiation has attached to, and it's a very loose bond. It's not like a chemical bond of some kind. And so there are people that advertise, for example, an inline water filter that'll filter out radiation. Well, that's nice, but the reality is that eventually that radiation is going to break loose and it's going to flow into your water. Eventually you're going to get it. And so the radiation is going to get through that water filter. That's why I have the pre-filter. You throw out the powder on a regular basis. It's taking out the radiation, and then you throw that aside. You don't leave it in your filter. And so it's simply a misnomer that you would have a filter element that takes out radiation, because eventually that radiation is going to break loose and go into your the bond, the very loose bond that's holding the radiation to that dirt or dust or whatever it's grabbed onto. That's going to break loose and it's going to flow into your water system. So at any rate, that's why I have the pre-filter. That's why it's called the chemical radiation, Chemrad oil pre-filter, because it also will take out oil, which is one of the more common pollutants when we have like flooding. You have cars, you have equipment that has oil in it, you have storage bins of gasoline or oil. Many of the floods that we've witnessed in past years, the oil storage regions are near a river. They break and that flows into the river and it's in the water. Well, you want to get that out of there before it goes into your nice, clean gravity water filter. That is what the pre-filter is all about. There are people who have such bad water. They have well water. They have such bad water that they use the pre-filter on a daily basis. If your nice, clean, white ceramic filters are getting gunked up, or they have orange or brown color in a week's period of time and they look really gunky, you need a pre-filter. You need a pre-filter to get that out before it goes in, because not only is it gunking up your filter elements, slowing them down and making a mess, it's making a mess of your tank also. And so not that they won't filter out the gunk, sure they will, but now you got a mess. And in emergency especially, how are you going to clean your water filter if you don't have clean water? So it's kind of it's a situation where you need a pre-filter. The pre-filter fits any of the standard stainless steel or plastic water filter, gravity feed water filters that have been sold by any company over the past 10 years. It's made in multiple sizes. When you see it, the basic form fits the stainless steel container, which actually is the smallest of the standard on the market gravity feed water filters. So the pre-filter cap, the canister, the funnel, you might call it, fits perfectly the stainless steel, all of the brands, and they're all the same. They are all the exact same size, the stainless steel containers. So the pre-filter is made for that, and also it's tailored to fit the larger size, and it goes all the way up to my modular filtration storage system, which is 6.5 gallons. That's the biggest one on the market, and it fits that one. So when it was the design was done, it was designed to fit all of these different water filters, so it fits them all. It's something everybody should have, plus an accessory set where you have extra paper filters plus the extra powders. And so it's just something a person should have. And it doesn't take much powder. You put a couple layers in depending on what you're trying to filter out. The instructions come with it. But do not put radiation-laden water. Do not put sludge water, water with oil or whatever. Don't put that in your clean water filter. You need a pre-filter. And for emergency, that's just something you should have. And the one thing I want to mention, the pre-filter, of course, does not fit the little mini travel filters. And for that, what I would use is just a T-shirt. If you had the pre-filter water before putting it in those and you're traveling, excuse me, just grab a T-shirt or something, let the water pour through that first into one of the containers, and then put it into the filters. But you have to do some kind of pre-filtering first. And also, my recommendation, here's what I've done over the last couple weeks. I won't explain all the history of this, but I am ramping up to have I believe that everybody out there, I mean, not just you listening, but everybody, your neighbors, everybody else should have a small travel the mini filters, the 1 and the 2 liter filters. So I am ramping up because I foresee the public buying these, and so I'm ramping up. It's a very unique product. The containers are extremely high quality, BPA free plastic. You can microwave them, you can put them in the dishwasher, and they are BPA free. They are very high quality food grade plastic. And you get 2 extra containers. You actually get 3 storage containers with locking caps with a rubber grommet so that you can carry these water containers with you. And so there's the 1 liter size and there's the 2 liter size. They come with 2 filter elements, the little 5-inch filter elements, and that's the GF filter. So when you're in, I'll tell you, I was in a hotel. We were down there last spring studying the chemtrails in Florida, and I had taken a shower in a hotel room, and my feet were burning. I realized the level of chemicals that they are putting in the water in many places in the United States. But I had my little travel filter with me, and I knew what I was drinking was good, clean, chemical-free water. And so anyway, it's very important when you travel, or like I say, have one in your car. I'm so convinced that the public is going to respond in large quantities. I'm ramping up to have large quantities of those filters available, the 1 and the 2 liter. And so it's something you should have, is the 1 liter or the 2 liter filter. Many people are buying 1, and I'm looking at a way to combine them so you could buy two of them and get free shipping, or some kind of, like, maybe buy 1 of 1 liter and 1 of 2 liter and get free shipping, something like that. I'm looking at that right now, but those are on the webpage, and like I say, I'm ramping up for quantities of those to have them in stock, so they're available because the public is simply going to wake up to the fact that they need water filtration. If you're a sports person, you're going to a sporting event in another state or another city, you should have a filter. I mean, look at what people are drinking and putting in their bodies. The primary element, the primary thing that you take every day is water. People are drinking bottled water. It's horrible. The chemicals from those little thin plastic bottles leaches out as cancer. It's carcinogen. It's going to cause cancer in your body. Don't drink the water from those water bottles. I sell stainless steel water bottles. And so basically, you know, this listener question that I started with this is how to store your gravity feed water filter. It leads to a whole lot of other questions, but the bottom line is stop just drinking water out of the tap. Put it through a water filter. The gravity feed water filters are really the best. The reason is because it's slow. It's taking its time. If you have any kind of filtration process under pressure, it's not going to do as well as a gravity feed water filter. You just fill it up every day. It's kind of like something you do. I had a story from a woman who has cats. She said her cats will not drink water from the tap. They look at her like, what are you giving me? You know, are you trying to poison me? The cats, and I've heard this from people with dogs, they will not drink water from the tap once you start giving them filtered water, because they know that that's the good stuff. Okay, I got to get off of this bandwagon here, but anyway, the other thing you can do is on my webpage, on the sales page, there's a button you can click on, a line that says, that gives you all of the properties of the gravity feed water filter elements, all of the things that it takes out. So go there and check that out. And by the way, the 10% sale is still there. It's going to be there for a few more days, probably through Thanksgiving. So take advantage of that. The webpage, jmccsci.com. Okay, sorry about that, but that's very important. That is a huge, huge important topic. A few quick announcements here. Something I've been looking into, Obama now is trying to open up the floodgates of immigration. What we have to look at is who is coming here, and what I've discovered is I would estimate about 50% of the immigrants that are coming to this country are dysfunctional. They are people who will never be anything but wards of the state. And it's really an unbelievably bad thing to say, but the reality is, because of American foreign policy, the people in foreign countries are just living in the dirt. You have generations of people who are living hand to mouth with terrible nutrition, terrible medical conditions, terrible water conditions, basic health conditions, and many times with a government that's just out of control. But the end result is these people are basically dysfunctional. They will never be able, and I'm not talking about all immigrants, I'm talking about probably 50% of them, and this is something that I have personally looked into. This is my personal estimate. But it is much easier to take care of these people in their own country. It costs a lot less money. And that's where they want to be. They don't want to be here. The only reason they want to come here is because, you know, maybe they'll get a better job or whatever, but their family is there, all the relatives. They want to be in their own country, the vast majority. If they had a job, if they had something to keep them there, if there was a decent life there that hadn't been destroyed by American imperialism. A note on the immigrating to the United States is not the cure-all. It doesn't cure the countries. It doesn't cure all the damage that's still there. The past week they landed on a comet, and all you see is a hot, dry rock. It looks like a shale bed. And there's no water, there's no snow, there's no ice, yet the European Space Agency can reporting, deep in that agency, those people know that that ain't no snowball. They are wrong, and literally they don't know what to do. They don't know what to talk about. It's pathetic, but that's what you're dealing with, tier 2 science. Let me just go through this once again. the layers of science. It's very important for people to understand. Tier 1 science is the black ops, military science. I've met these people. They've come out to meet me. I've seen what's going on in terms of space travel, in terms of propulsion systems, etc., and it's not what they present to the public. NASA, and typically what you see in the public, in the glossy media, etc., the NASA, what you are told is the top level of science, is really Tier 2. That's the fairy tale science that's pawned off on the public. Tier 3 is what I call textbook repeaters. These would be like college professors, people teaching courses all the way down into grade school who have a textbook and they're repeating whatever they're told. That's the Tier 3 layer of science. Tier 4 layer of science are the outreach people like, say, Phil Plait or Bill Nye, the Science Guy, or National Geographic, History Channel Special, Discover Magazine, Scientific American. That's would be Tier 4 layer of science. These are the bloggers, the information that's not on an educational level, but kind of on a throwing it in your face on the internet or the glossy magazines. That's Tier 4 science. But all of this branches down from Tier 2 science. The Tier 1 science you never see. You will never see the names, and that science is not published. The guys that talk about the respectable peer-reviewed journals, that's pure Tier 2 science. 99.9% of real science and mathematics is never published in peer-reviewed journals. That's the Tier 2 baloney that's pawned off on you, the public. So Einstein, for example, never published in journals. He had two publications when he was in the United States in peer-reviewed journals, and he spoke openly about the disaster, which is the so-called peer-reviewed journals. I have a subpage. If you scroll down on my webpage, I have a subpage that deals with peer review. So basically, let me just make a comment. Some people over time have approached me to have debates on the radio with various scientific people, or if you want to call them that, even suggesting that I somehow, I won't say names, but my answer is no. Why would I debate a Tier 2 scientist? They don't know anything. All they can repeat is a textbook. There's no debate there. In fact, the mere term scientific debate is an oxymoron, because science, by its very nature, is dependent on experimentation, theory. You create a theory, prediction, then the scientific experimentation through the scientific method is what resolves scientific issues. Not a popular vote, or not what some guy that thinks he knows something is presenting through some kind of an argument. I mean, a scientific debate is an oxymoron. It's ludicrous. Science is dependent on scientific evidence, research, experimentation, and that's been that way since the time of Galileo. That's where the scientific method began. So a scientific debate is an oxymoron. But what happens today, the press, which is owned by the European bankers, have their Tier 2 scientists, and they put a lot of money and time into Tier 2 science. It's because they have to keep the population very stupid relative to science. And so that's why they don't like me, because I expose this. I expose their Tier 1 layer of science that honors only them, and who they have these scientists under the gun that if they talk in the public, they would be basically ruined their lives, their families' lives would be affected, etc. So you'll never hear anything real coming down towards the public. Just a quick comment. This past week, China announced its new stealth fighter, a jet plane, and lo and behold, it's a carbon copy of the F-35 U.S. stealth fighter that was just released a short while ago, the J-31 Chinese stealth fighter. And I heard a guy on the news saying that, the design, somebody from China hacked into Lockheed Martin or one of the subcontractors and got the blueprints. No, This is not how the real world works. That's fairy tale information. What happens, and I have seen this specifically happen when I was out in L.A. back in the 80s, I saw this happening regularly, where new designs inside the the U.S. Defense Department would come along for, say, jet fighters. Within days, it was a race for those people that worked as salesmen, so to speak, for the New World Order. That it took like a day for them to get that design across to Russia or to France, where they were then incorporating that same design into their designs. It's needed for the bankers to maintain a balance of power and between the super giant powers. It's needed so that they can push support towards one or the other if one of them happens to get out of line. And so anyway, this Chinese fighter plane, that it's an exact copy of the U.S. F-35, is no surprise. Somebody made a lot of money by moving those designs. And that's the way it works. It's not some Chinese hacker in the middle of a subcontractor for Lockheed Martin. When I was in California in the early 1980s, there was an engineer that designed what is called the Tiger Shark nose for the F-14. At the time, it was the F-14 fighters, the Navy fighters, and that allowed the plane to fly sideways and shoot its guns or armament sideways while flying sideways and then flip back. And it's just an airfoil shape on the nose of the jet. Okay, so anyway, it was in the next fall air show, the Paris air show, both the Russians and the French already had that incorporated into their new line of jets. That's how fast these things move. And the engineer, I talked to him personally, I said, "You got ripped off here." He said, "I know it, but if I keep my mouth shut, I'll get future contracts and my career will progress." That was the conversation I had with the engineer that designed the shark nose for the F-14 fighter. That's how fast it went out of our Defense Department and into the Russian and French-made fighter planes. Okay, well, anyway, I spent so much time on the storage, etc., the information about water filters, but it's very important information. How to deal with that. And, you know, the number one thing that you need is clean water. And most people don't have it. They don't have a way to filter it, and then after they filter it, they don't have a way to store it or take it with them. Using plastic, that thin plastic water bottles is terrible, and I see people drinking it all the time. And I mention something to them, and they look at me, and they go, "You know it. I really shouldn't be drinking this." And they're like, "Well, you know, you're pouring that in your body every day. You're going to have, by the time you're 40, you're going to have cancer. Because of the water you're drinking, you think you're doing something healthy." Anyway, I am out of time here. Remember the webpage, JMCC, S as in Sam, C as in Charlie, I as in Indigo, 7 letters, JMCCSCI.com. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.